Once that's loose to the human spirit,
we are fighting down the bottom with a bottom group of players.
That's an extremely naive statement.
I didn't know any of that.
The arm sock tube's far too big for me.
Owning the high line with Rabbi in red, talking the rabbits and turning heads with questions from you and analysis in your car, in your home. Thank you for tuning to Holding the High Line.
Bing bong and happy holidays, Rapids fans. This is Holding the High Line with Rabbi in Red. We are brought to you by Icarus FC and Roughneck Scarves. My name is Matt Pollard. It is Tuesday, December 28th, 2021, and you are listening to the final episode of HTHL in calendar year 2021. The Omicron variant is complicating things in European football. Cole Bassett has his first cap and first goal for the United States at the senior level. And Italian restaurants in Toronto are about to be replacing all their Giovinco posters with a guy who's probably better than him. I'm joined now by the ruler of the planet, Omicron, Judy I-8, Rabbi Mark Goodman.
I aimed my Jewish space laser and flew myself right up there, and I am good to go. How you been, Matt? How was your Christmas season? Did you get all the things under the tree that you wanted?
Yeah, for the most part. There's still a few things that need to be shipped. There's some, I guess there's pending supply chains delays in the United States of America. I'll be getting pretty much everything that I wanted. I guess one thing that I should say, Mark, is that I did not get was a Fulham win on Boxing Day, as that game was postponed, along with many other matches across Europe and in English football. But, you know, overall, it was a good Christmas. Went home, saw the family and everything. Now had the two negative rapid PCR tests, or I don't know if they're actually PCR tests, but the rapid one that you nose swab and then wait for the two lines, kind of like a pregnancy test almost. And both of those came back negative. So arrived without suffering Omicron on Southwest to the Burbank Airport. Obviously was able to then see the grandparents who are boosted on Christmas Day, and then came back in a sense of also tested negative as well. I unfortunately, Mark, you know, because of wanting to save PTO for some other things, I'm not taking this week off. I don't know if you've been paying attention, but the mountains have been absolutely getting shelled, and all of my social media platforms are just besmitten with people having enjoyable powder days, and I unfortunately have not been able to partake the last 2 days. Mark, what is the... Most of my other Jewish friends have some form of routine or tradition that they have on Christmas Day, since obviously they aren't doing what, you know, the basic average American family is doing on Christmas. Are you going to a movie? Are you going to see a show? Is it just Chinese food? What does December 25th in the Goodman household look like is a question I have never asked you.
That's a great question. I grew up in a family where my parents were divorced. My mom was married to a non-Jewish guy, and my dad had, like, you know, the customary custody for like two vacation weeks a year. So he got 1 week at Christmas and 1 week at in the summertime, which meant that when I was a kid, we went skiing for a week in the winter. And we went river rafting for a week in the summer with my dad. And so for that Christmas week, we would always like leave to go to Colorado on like December 23rd. We would ski on the 24th. And then the great thing about being Jewish at a ski resort in America is you wake up early on December 25th and you ride, you know, no lines whatsoever all over the mountain. Now, remember, I'm old, folks. So I grew up in the era before high-speed quad chairs kind of dominated ski mountains. So you rode those rickety old slow double chairs, you know, that were built in like the 1970s and run off of a lawnmower engine. So like, you know, on Christmas morning at like Aspen or Vail or Steamboat, those would back up. Like those in by midday, you know, it's like the busiest ski week of the year. Those lines are packed. So that's what I did as a kid. My wife, however, grew up on the East Coast, and East Coast Jews overwhelmingly get Chinese food. And that's an old school tradition. probably reaching back to the fact that Chinese restaurants were the only restaurants that were open on Christmas Day, and also because for very strange reasons, Jews have always had an affinity for Chinese food because, unlike a lot of other cuisine, the food pretty much was dairy-free. So Jews could be either non-transgressive or they could be non-transgressive style, in the sense that, like, if you're a kosher-keeping Jew or a kosher-style-keeping Jew, you could order all the chicken and beef dishes and skip all the pork and shellfish dishes. Whereas if you go to, like, your average Italian restaurant in America, 90% of the dishes are going to combine milk and meat in a dish. Plus, they're all going to be closed on Christmas. So, for those reasons, because I'm married now, because it's raining every day in Pittsburgh and there hasn't been a single day of snow yet here, we did not go skiing on Christmas Day. We ordered Chinese late in the afternoon. But the other thing, Matt, was Christmas fell on Saturday this year, which also meant that the senior rabbi, the executive director, the receptionist, and two other senior staff at my synagogue were off. And I was giving the sermon in the main sanctuary to an audience of exceedingly few human beings. So I was the big time rabbi at the synagogue here in Pittsburgh on the 25th. And that's a new tradition for me, giving the Christmas Day sermon at synagogue, which, you know, if you're a preacher in the Christian world, that's the biggest day of the year for you. If you're a rabbi, everybody else is on vacation and no one's listening.
Yeah, no, I hear you on that, Mark. Your comments on the vacation skiing are something that's interesting for various reasons, not just last year, folks. There have been a few times since me moving to Colorado where I haven't gone home for one of Thanksgiving or Christmas. Well, I should say in 2020, obviously, I didn't go home at all. And then obviously, I was at DSG for Thanksgiving Day this year. And so frequently, I will supplement that in some capacity. So I think I don't think I went on Christmas Day 2020, if I remember correctly, because we wanted to FaceTime open presents, so they just sent boxes to me, and so I had addresses of things. I generally knew what they were, but I avoided looking at them and just opened boxes rather than having gift wrap stuff, obviously. But I remember distinctly going skiing on Thanksgiving because I knew it was going to be a slow day. And then I went skiing, I believe, both New Year's Eve and New Year's Day. I think I had both those days off in 2020. So I went, though. New Year's Day is a fantastic day to go skiing, in case you were wondering, folks, because lots of people are hungover or haven't come back. So as long as it's not on like a weekend to where, you know, to where just there's maybe some travel coming in, people thinking like, you know, New Year's Day, like New Year's Day weekend, as opposed to it being like randomly on a Wednesday that you just have off. And in theory, you know, those plebs who are coming in from out of state, you know, have to take more vacation days off because they're not working that Tuesday or Thursday and everything that works. But I'd say generally Christmas plus or minus 3 days on either side, I typically avoid in the mountains because of how busy it is, the Jerrys that are out, and to say nothing, obviously, this year, Mark, of the fact that there's a lot of people coming from out of state. And presumably, if I were skiing the entire day of Christmas Day, I would overlap with somebody who is, you know, I would be one degree of Kevin Bacon removed from somebody who had the Omicron variant, which is something I'm trying to avoid at this time of the year. But speaking of this time,
keep dodging it, Matt.
Speaking of this time of the year, Mark, we're obviously just a couple days away from 2022, or should I say 2020 part two, in the case of the new year and everything. And so this is a time when we think about New Year's resolutions. Mark, do you have anything that you're thinking about when it comes to New Year's resolution? I guess another question is, does New Year's resolution time really come for you in early fall? And I guess should we be thinking about New Year's resolutions for either the Rapids community or the Colorado Rapids on the technical side?
No, I mean, the great thing for me is, I'll do both of those questions really quickly. The great thing for me is that Jews really do like a New Year's cleanse at the high holidays, the Jewish New Year, which is in September. For me, I was definitely going to get back to running in the fall, and then I didn't. So my New Year's resolution is like, after the weather clears, to really get back to running, because I have put on a few pounds, and I'm not happy about it. I think I'm like 6 pounds over my fighting weight that I'd really like to be at. That's my personal New Year's resolution. For Colorado, I think their New Year's resolution is to win playoff games. You know, I think that is a very harsh way of complaining about what was an awesome 2021 year. But I think we are at the phase as Colorado Rapids fans where we no longer expect them to squeak into the playoffs in seventh place and, you know, thrill us all by being a, you know, low spend, high achievement or middle achievement team. We kind of expect more of them. I think additionally with the Western Conference being a bit upended this year, LAFC were bad last year, are likely to be rebuilding next year. LA Galaxy are going to be rebuilding next year. That opens up a lot of opportunity for the Rapids to kind of solidify their position as a real front runner in the Western Conference, which means that going into the playoffs, they have expectations. That would be my New Year's resolution for them, but that's awfully broad. Matt, do you have any, one, personal New Year's resolutions, two, Colorado Rapids New Year's resolutions?
Yeah, I think for the Rapids, I think the same thing. It has to be, you know, it has to be continue to build on what they've been working on. And I think, you know, from a proof of concept standpoint, that has to lead to a third straight appearance in the MLS Cup playoffs. And I think that has to lead to more success in the playoffs, which has to include winning a playoff game. If there was one thing else that I'd kind of point out, I think the team increasingly is starting to the proof of concept in terms of getting to a sustainable model in terms of what they're doing with distressed assets, with the homegrowns, and then trying to increasingly get into the market in Europe, I think is probably going to have to continue. As we've kind of talked about, you know, I think there's a number of players who are going to get some rumbles when it comes to January. A lot of people seem to think that's Cole Bassett, especially with him scoring his goal for the national team in the friendly against Bosnia and Herzegovina. I increasingly think that if anybody goes in January, it is probably going to be Austin Trusty. I think for Trusty, it's just a matter of, does somebody match the price that I think the Rapids would put at? And I think $4 or $5 million would get there in terms of the Rapids valuation for him and then also market value for him. And I think Austin Trusty is more a complete product. And you, given the clubs that would be looking for a player like that, would be willing to spend the money it would take to get him, it'd be a relatively no-brainer in terms of an opportunity for him both economically and in terms of going to Europe. Where I think things get complicated with Bassett is you're probably spending a little bit more. The money that you're spending is to buy an opportunity for potential realized rather than the finished product that he isn't right now. And then I think the other question is, you know, he's at a club that obviously trusts him, is investing in him. They're with a coaching staff that obviously values him, a coaching staff that will continue to make progress for him, you know, whether he plays 1,500 minutes next year or whether he plays 500 minutes next year. And so you could see him not being a regular starter in 2022 and still improving as a player. I don't know that, you know, like the opportunity at Benfica, which was largely going to start out on the B team and then working your way into the first team. I don't know, going somewhere to be a bench player is necessarily the right move for him right now in his career, regardless of where we are in his career and regardless of where we are in terms of the cycle for the World Cup and everything, with the fact that, you know, he's really looking at 2026 in terms of getting in to the national team. But if I had to put other things other than winning a playoff game, I think it's increasingly get into the market globally, both with what they're doing in Central and South America, and then obviously with selling players on to Europe, and that has to be selling players at value to opportunities where they're able to succeed. I think the player that is in the best position to do that and would be willing to do that and they would get economic value benefit for him and for the club would be Austin Trusty. A few news and notes that I'm going to go through, and then Mark, feel free to comment on all of them when I get through. First of all, we have not podcasted since MLS Club has been completed. So first of all, I want to say congratulations to NYCFC in defeating the Portland Timbers. I guess by the transitive property then, the Colorado Rapids are the third best team in the MLS Cup playoffs because they had the closest loss to the Portland Timbers that anybody else had, and then that team went on to lose to the eventual MLS Cup champion. Asterisk there, I guess, in saying that the Bethlehem Steel Philadelphia Union 2 almost beat NYCFC in the conference final. No Rapids players were taken in the MLS expansion draft. Mark, I think you and I are increasingly leaning that Charlotte FC is going for a more global international feel rather than trying to work within MLS, and that's leaning them more towards the FC Cincinnati end of the scale rather than the LAFC Atlanta United end of the scale for them as an expansion team. And then the United States, as I mentioned, got a 1-0 victory in their December camp friendly against a very much reserved Bosnia and Herzegovina side. A number of players got their debut for the senior team under Greg Berhalter. Kellen Acosta started. He's had a, in terms of just number of games, number of minutes, and success that he's had, Kellen Acosta, spectacular 2021 season for him. He starts, does sustain a pretty hard tackle that led to the red card for Bosnia. Acosta ended up staying in the game, including into the second half, so he was fine on that from an injury standpoint. And then Bassett comes on late in the game, scores the goal, kind of a fox in the box late run situation that he dinks one in off a rebound that the goalkeeper gave up, and so Bassett scores the goal in a 1-0 victory for the United States. So Bassett gets his debut, coming in off the bench, scores his first goal, so he opens his account as well for the senior team. Mark, any things that we want to say about all of that? City winning, Pigeons winning MLS Cup, no Rapids players getting taken in the expansion draft, and then what we can glean for what Charlotte FC is trying to do, and then obviously the United States getting a win behind a goal Bassett.
Just a quick recap of MLS Cup, which was that it was kind of a dull game for, I don't know, what, like 80 minutes, and then the final 10 minutes were bazonkers, where there was a tying goal from Portland that was fantastic, and like the 83rd or something like that, and then a game winner in like the 90th plus two for NYCFC to take them out of going into overtime. It was a very exciting final stretch, but not a great soccer game, unfortunately. But that's really common in cup finals. I think there are a few people online who were kind of complaining about, like, oh, MLS Cup's never good. And it was like, have you ever watched the UCL final? Like, have you ever watched the UEFA Cup? Like, it's like, those games tend to be bad. You know, those games tend to be, you know, 90 minutes of cagey, you know, as both teams try to get to PKs. Or there's been a couple years where one team just blew the other team out, you know, by halftime, and it was basically over, and that was that. So that's normal, you know, that's okay. I guess the only other thing I wanted to comment on was your comment about Charlotte and the way they're assembling a team. The jury's still out. We don't really know what they're doing. They acquired an additional international slot today, paying DC United GAM, undisclosed amounts of GAM for their international slot. That would bring them to at least 8 international slots. They immediately used one of those slots today also, either before it or after it, in signing, I'm sure I'm going to mispronounce this. No, I'm not going to mispronounce it. I think it's fine. Croatian goalkeeper Christian Kalina. I may put the accent in the wrong place because I don't know where the accent in a Croatian name goes. But he's 29 years old. I don't know that you should ever go out on the international market to get a goalkeeper. I personally think that MLS and USL have a ton of really good goalkeepers, but, you know, Charlotte is going to do what Charlotte is going to do, and we'll see how they go about building this roster. So I guess those are my major comments. I was not at all surprised that nobody from the Colorado Rapids was selected in the expansion draft. It did not seem to me that there was anybody there. In fact, the guys who did get selected were very strange. There were two players that I liked who got selected, who then immediately got flipped to other teams for cash or for super draft slots or both. So that was a bit perplexing, but you know, that's how it's going. I mean, you know, people are building teams in different ways this year. One thing that I'm going to warn you all about, I'm writing a good back pass for, hopefully it'll be out tomorrow, but I'm answering a lot of questions. One of the areas I'm not going to address at all, having spent like 8 seconds looking at it, which we're not covering on this podcast at all, we might in a couple weeks, is the Super Draft and trying to prognosticate, you know, who the Rapids might pick at Super Draft and who might make a splash in MLS next year from college. I watch more college soccer than I think you do, Matt. And this is a really dry year. This is a really down year. There's a lot of There's a lot of players who I don't think are likely to make a breakthrough into MLS. It just feels like there's less opportunity. That being said, there might be some Generation Adidas guys coming through, but we weren't going to talk about it anyways. But I just kind of throw that out there that, like, if you're looking for us to give lots and lots of wisdom about who in college is going to make a big impact next year, you know, I'll throw out some names of guys that I like, but I think those are all guys who will, you know, be solid performers in the USL, but nobody who, I don't think anybody in the Super Draft is going to make an impact next year in MLS.
Yeah, well said there, Mark. On to a little bit of sad news, folks. On December 12th, Lori Ford, Courtney Ford's mother, passed away after an extended battle with cancer. She was in hospice care as of 11:25. For those who are wondering, Court has tweeted out the details of the celebration of life. I should point out this was tweeted out on December 19th. I do not know what things will look like in terms of local restrictions that may limit or alter the status of this event or its circumstances. But in any case, as of right now, it's Saturday, January 8th at 11 a.m. It is open to the public. No RSVP is needed. And then feel free to go over to Court's Twitter page, at Court Ford, no E in Ford, in case of his Twitter handle, for details on where that will be. Further, I should point out his GoFundMe is still up, and at this point now all funds will go towards the funeral costs, which I'm sure are substantial even in the year 2021 or going into 2022, and is right now, as of time of recording, raised over $30,000. And Mark, not that I'm going to go down and call out everybody, but if you look through the donations and even just search by recent ones or top donations, it's a lot of former teammates of Courtney Ford. It's a lot of members of the Rapids family. This has been, in terms of raising money, given the financial hardship of the people in question, has been, I think, a triumph of the soccer community and certainly the Rapids community, and certainly a celebration for Lori and what she was as a member of the Rapids community. Obviously unfortunate given the circumstances of what Court's now facing, you know, as a human being, and without obviously his most significant person in his life and his mother passing away. Mark, anything you want to say about that, or shall we move on?
I just remember when we all did the stand for Court Ford back in, it's a long time ago. Feels like 2016, 2017. We stood in the 26th minute, which was really a nice gesture. I made sure to make it to the stadium for that, because I don't normally go to games on Friday nights. I spend them with my families. That was, like, I think one of the only Friday night games that I have been to in the last 6 years. So, you know, it feels like the fan base, the club, the players have all rallied around him. He has a special place in the hearts of the players because he was a homegrown, because he had a rough upbringing, because his mother was the central figure and effectively the only parent in his life. You know, like, all of that makes the story of Court Ford an exceptional one. You know, he played for Denver University on top of that. Like, he's us, he's ours. And so it hurts so much more, right? Like, any Colorado Rapids player who lost a close family member, we would feel for. It feels a little bit different when it's a player who grew up in Colorado, who played college ball in Colorado, and who, you know, really his mother was the main, like, parent, relative in his life, in his family. So, you know, our love and our condolences out to the Ford family.
Rest in power, Lori. Let's move on, Mark. Oh, one thing that I did want to mention, since Charlotte will have some relevance, folks, the Rapids will be playing the MLS expansion team, Charlotte FC, on April 23rd. That is a 7 p.m. kickoff. I believe that is a Saturday, at Dick's Sporting Goods Park. So we'll certainly get a look at what Charlotte's going to look like. And I should point out, Mark, Jeffter, I think the primary transfer window will still be open at that point. So very much as much as most MLS expansion expansion teams are an incomplete or unfinished product in April of their first year of existence. Certainly Charlotte will still be what they're trying to brew will still very much be in the keg and in the works. So that should be that should be a match in which the Rapids are expecting to get 3 points, regardless of what DP action we see from Charlotte in the coming weeks once the January transfer window opens. Oh, Mark, another former Rapids player or Rapids personality has landed. Connor Casey, much like Pablo Mastroianni, has realized if you're not working for the Colorado Rapids and you want to still coach, you have to do it outside the state of Colorado. And he's landed at USL Championship side, Charleston Battery. Mark, what do we make of this move, given how much Connor was kind of just out of the public space, given that it would have been middle of 2019 that he was the interim coach, reportedly was offered an opportunity to coach at Colorado Springs Switchbacks, chose to not pursue that opportunity, and over 2.5 years later now has landed at Charleston, one of the old guards of the USL Championship, and that's saying a lot given how much expansion and folding has occurred during the midst of the pandemic. Mark, what do we think about this for Connor? What can you tell us about the Charleston Battery team that he's inheriting or potentially building upon? And how excited are you to see him back on the touchline, grumpy and stoic when he comes to Pittsburgh?
There are only three what would be considered original teams in the Eastern Conference of the USL that are still in existence today. The Pittsburgh Riverhounds, the Charleston Battery, and the Richmond Kickers are the only teams. And only two of them are in the championship. One of them, the Kickers, are down in League One. So that's kind of interesting. The other thing, Charleston... have a new stadium that they inaugurated, I think, either last year or the year before, which is kind of exciting. They've always been a really cool USL team with a very clear identity and a strong fan base. Their very clear identity, unlike a lot of the teams in USL Championship, I've always kind of broken the USL Championship down into either three or four subcategories. There's the guys who have joined the league and have aspirations of moving on to MLS. So that was Nashville in the old days. It's Indy today. Charlotte was clearly that, although Charlotte Independents are now a hot mess due to the fact of the Charlotte FC expansion.
Phoenix, Sacramento, Cincinnati, I would put on that list.
Absolutely, absolutely. Teams that did jump and teams that are still waiting to jump for a lot of reasons. The second, Las Vegas would be in that category, hypothetically. A second category is the two teams, right? New York Red Bull 2. Those are no longer going to be, quote unquote, a problem since they've now basically been moved over to MLS Next Pro, which is a funny thing that we will talk about some more down the road. And we want to talk about the Rapids 2 and Reserve League. The third category has been second division cities that know they're second division cities and don't aspire to anything else, right? Like the Rochester Rhinos, the Pittsburgh Riverhounds, and Charleston are these teams where, like, there are some people who write about or talk about that someday Pittsburgh will have an MLS team. I think those people are idiots. Pittsburgh's never going to have an MLS team. Like, we're not an MLS market. There's no money behind the team. And even if there was a lot of money behind the team, the fan base just is not there. We don't even have an NBA team. So, you know, I think an MLS team is quite a stretch. And then the fourth division, which I don't even want to talk about, is teams that are really poorly founded and are bound for disaster. Anyways, point being, Charleston is a team like the Riverhounds, where they don't get young kids. They don't kind of like get a guy like Daniel Rios, like Nashville did a few years ago, a very high-end player who they can buy and say, hey, let's spend a year with you before we move on to MLS. It's a team that is filled with journeymen, right? It is like the vast majority of their roster in Charleston is going to be 27, 28, 29-year-old guys who've spent either their entire career or almost their entire career in USL. A couple guys who've had a cup of coffee at the MLS level, a couple guys who've played in third level teams in Europe who you've never heard of, right? Like, that's Charleston, and they make it work, and they're always a good team. They've never been kind of a low-end club in the league. So that's what Connor Casey has to work with. I think that's going to be great for him. I think he's really going to like those kinds of guys. The travel in the USL Eastern Conference is, it has been since they went to four divisions last year, it's been a lot better. Now there's been some flux and some change because of the new MLS Next Pro. So they're losing a couple teams. They may go back to one big open division of USL East, which would increase the amount of travel. It's really interesting. We'll see what happens. USL is always totally crazy and really interesting. The other big development in USL is they are starting a second division women's league, next year, which is going to be really interesting. I don't know if that's going to have any impact on Charleston, but there are things happening at the USL level. Connor Casey's coming at the right time, I think, for this league. There's a lot of flux, although there always is. And I think he'll, to your point about, like, where's he been since he left being an interim with the Rapids, that's a great question. You know, it's a really similar story to Pablo Mastroeni, and I would suggest and suspect that maybe the reasoning behind it is the same, which is that Mastroeni had, like, a no-compete clause that was related to his firing. Like, if he took a new job, we actually don't know this for a fact, but there has been speculation that if he had taken a new job in the time after the year he had been let go from the Rapids, he would stop getting paid by them. But the other thing is, and even if that's not true, he probably had enough money that he could kind of wait for the right opportunity to hit him. I feel the same about Connor Casey, which is that he probably didn't have to jump at the first job that he came across after the interim job. He probably had time where he could kind of hang out and pick his next spot, and he has. So,
Mark, I don't know how much this adds. I heard this a while. I think I reported it, but I if I didn't, in any case, it bears repeating. I had also heard that it was in that Pablo wasn't getting paid out for the actual years of his contract, and that he was not going to get paychecks at the same rate for the duration of his contract. It was all going to come in a lump sum or prorated for that next year in just the year following. So this would have been, because he was fired in 2017, so this would have been just 2018 as well. So I'd heard from a few different people it was a lump sum and it was going to come at the end of 2018 no matter what, and that was going to be that was going to be dependent on whether or not he took another job. There was going to be some decrease in the amount, and some of it was going to be prorated. In any case, you're what we've both heard, that there was kind of a wait a year, and that waiting a year was best for you financially, is what I had heard also about Pablo regardless.
Yeah, I'll say it a different way, which is, like, I know this from my own personal experience, which is if you have enough money that you don't need to take a job that you really don't want, then you won't take the job that you really don't want. You'll wait until the right job comes across your plate. And I think that that's the probably common denominator between Mastroeni and Connor Casey, which is, like, they probably made enough in their final year with Colorado that they didn't need to take some job with some team that they didn't want to go to or in some city that they didn't want to live in. They could just wait for their moment and wait till the thing. Charleston, South Carolina is a beautiful place to go. I've been through South Carolina, and it's a really lovely place. And everybody I know who's ever been there has had nothing but rave reviews. I'm looking forward to making that a destination trip at some point in my soccer travel career. So, you know, good luck to Connor Casey. I hope that based on all the problems we've had with COVID restrictions on interviewing people, that if I can talk to our media guy in Pittsburgh when they get here next year and get 10 minutes with him, you know, before the game or after the game, that would be awesome.
Fantastic, Mark. So the second stage of their entry draft is a thing that still exists, folks, and the Colorado Rapids drafted a player in that. They selected Brian Acosta, former central, slightly defensive-ish for me, midfielder from FC Dallas. They did give up a little bit in order to get him. They didn't have to give up anything to FC Dallas because he was in the reentry draft because Dallas declined a team option that was available for them. So all the Rapids had to do was ensure that they were getting him. And to do that, they had to move up in that draft to ensure that. And so they sent $750K in general allocation money to Toronto FC to also swap. You can't just trade away a reentry draft spot and then also like not be in the reentry draft. So effectively they swapped the second and 22nd pick in that second stage with Toronto in addition to the GAM. Toronto obviously didn't end up selecting a player. So effectively they sent 75K to get the bidding rights or the MLS rights for Brian Acosta. The reentry draft first stage, folks, means that if you select that player, you're effectively just picking up the option that was available for that player in the reentry draft stage two. That usually means either making them a bona fide offer. MLS is really ambiguous as to what a bona fide offer means, in that we don't really have any definition for that. Or that you just get the negotiation rights for a player who is potentially eligible free agency, but also eligible from the expanded draft. Acosta, for what it's worth, folks, in 2021 had a base salary of $650K and then a guaranteed compensation of $700K. So there's a buy him down with CAM, give him a little bit of TAM, or potentially, just based on his salary, would have been eligible to be designated player for FC Dallas in 2021. I would imagine in the Rapids selecting him in stage two rather than stage one means that whatever bona fide offer they were making for him would be less than he was probably making in 2021. He's in a Honduran international mark, played 23 games for FC Dallas this year, 16 starts, 1,573 minutes, no goals, two assists, and 3 years with FC Dallas, albeit this truncated by the pandemic, and obviously him missing some time due to call-up with the Honduras national team, two goals and five assists in that time. Like I said, kind of a holding midfielder. If you told me right now, Mark, that Brian Acosta was going to be on the team, if you told me Nicholas Mosquito was not going to be returning and that Cole Bassett was going to be sold to Europe, I'm still not sure that Brian Acosta is a starter for this team in 2022. Mark, what do we make of this? Are the Rapids actually negotiating in good faith with this guy? Is he going to sign some deal in potentially for a lower level Liga MX team? Is he going to go back to Honduras? Mark, convince me in a very Tifo football kind of way, convince me that I should care about this player the Rapids signed or traded $750K in GAM to acquire the rights to but have not yet signed.
I think I would be surprised if they don't sign him. I think this is a part of a plan. I think that that Porrick Smith and the Colorado Rapids front office have evaluated him and say he is good. If we could get him at the price that we think he's worth, which is probably $300,000 to $500,000 a year, it's a good move. He's not worth $700,000, so you don't go get him for that. But and I think a bona fide offer has got to be at least 200, but I don't think you can land him for 200 because I think he is going to say that's too much of a dip in salary. So that's what I think. I mean, I think the Rapids are really, you know, between him and Max Alves, the guy they've been rumored to be linked with in the Brazilian league, whose name is normally just said as Max because he's Brazilian. It very, very clearly seems to me that the Colorado Rapids are trying to firm up their midfield. And that's, you could say that that's strange because their midfield is totally full. They've got plenty of players there. My sense is that there's some guys who they expect to either trade or be departing, you know, to your point about Cole Bassett, which I don't want to belabor because you said it really well. And also because, again, it's in Backpass for this week, so I'll talk a lot about what I think is going on with Cole Bassett and so on. But so I think that this is a likely move. The only thing that's a little strange is that his profile as a player for FC Dallas was as a deep-lying defensive midfielder who was really great at distributing the ball and was a pretty good defender, but didn't do a great job of advancing forward, you know, on the dribble. And had other areas like defensively where he was like of question. So like the statistical thing with him that was really interesting was that, and I put it in a tweet earlier this week, he was really good at interrupting, meaning he was a step into the passing lanes kind of guy, but not a really good tackler or ball clearer. So that's an interesting thing. So to that sense, I think he makes a lot of sense potentially for the Rapids as like a backup defensive midfielder. You have a 2-1 lead in the 70th minute and Jack Price is tired. You take Price off, you put on Brian Acosta, and you get some defensive back shielding for your back four. That's where he would make sense, except that makes a little bit less sense if you consider that Marc-Anthony Kay could do that if you needed him to. Cole Bassett can do that if you need him to. And there's already a lot. And so can Colin Warren, if you need him to. So it just makes me feel like there seems to be a lot of midfielders on this team. Something's got to give. Maybe somebody's not going to come back.
Yeah, I think the only thing that I would add to that, Mark, is, you know, we also have to take in consideration the fact that, you know, and I think this was one of many reasons why, while the Rapids were interested in Sebastian Legette, as I reported, he ultimately didn't go to Colorado, is Marc-Anthony Kay and Kellen Acosta are going to miss some significant time in 2022 with their national teams striving towards World Cup qualification. And, you know, I'm not saying that they'll be taking it easy, but obviously there's going to be something potentially on their mind even going into the playoffs of the, as much as I want to win MLS Cup, let me not go into a tackle that's potentially going to have me break bones or tear an ACL with the World Cup potentially coming up. Now, Brian Acosta is relatively a regular, at least getting called up, not necessarily always a starter for Los Catrachos and everything. But if we look at it, Honduras is an eighth right now in CONCACAF World Cup qualifying. They have 3 points. They obviously had that big meltdown against the U.S. in the second half that potentially saved Greg Berhalter's job, and that they basically been in free fall since. They've lost their last four games. They've got 3 games in January. Anything less than 7 points, I would say, from that, and they're pretty much done. Does then the Federation say, hey, let's actually use this as an exercise for bleeding guys in the, into the team who've been on the outskirts? We know what Brian Acosta is. He's 28 years old. He's not going to change anymore. Let him focus on his club form and be successful there, to where acquiring Brian Acosta doesn't mean a de facto third guy getting called up, using high leverage minutes in high critical games during the international windows in 2022, like it does certainly for a K and definitely a Kellen Acosta. One thing else to think about. Mark, there's been some rumblings. This is MLS silly season, obviously, and paying attention to social media and Instagram and Snapchat. What's the poster? I say Instagram stories. I guess it would just be Snapchat posts, and I can't remember. There's other terminology for you post something, but it's not a permanent thing, and it disappears after 24 hours. Instagram stories. Kellen Acosta. Dominic Baggi posted a cryptic post of his potential jersey, and people have kind of figured out based on the lines and the shading, even though it was mostly in black and white, that would have been the jersey of FC Cincinnati's home kit in 2021. And there's been some rumblings from people who are more with it when it comes to FFC news and sourcing and everything, that potentially there's at least discussions going on there. The Rapids haven't come out and said that they're no longer negotiating with Dominic Baggi at time of recording. Nothing's been officially public, but there's been indications, folks, that other clubs, including FC Cincinnati, are interested in Dominic Baggi, and he could be leaning towards that and a potential payday. And while maybe not making the playoffs in 2022, Mark, certainly, and maybe even fewer minutes, maybe more money, and then also, you know, having service from Lucho Acosta and Brenner to get tap-in goals is maybe a little bit better than some of the grind-out opportunities that Dom Baggi was going to have to get in order to get his in 2022. Mark, what do we make of this rumbling? Is this just posturing to get Pork to cough up another year of contract, or maybe a goal bonus or something like that? And do we think that Baggi is headed away from DSG in 2022?
I think he's headed away. And I think that that's because I would say that I've been pessimistic on Baggi, and that was ill-fated. That was my best use of the phrase ill-fated maybe ever. Maybe my only use of the phrase ill-fated ever. But anyways, the thing is, he scored a bunch of goals after arriving with the Colorado Rapids. I think it would be really dangerous as a general manager to extrapolate out from that and say, well, he scored 5 goals in just a few games with us. Clearly, he's due for a 20-goal season next year. But the flip side of that is Baji's agent is likely leaning on that in his negotiating tactics right now, which is like, oh, I scored all these goals. Like, you should pay me a lot of money next year because I'm just going to blow up. The flip side of that is Baji may be telling his agent, like, look, I can score goals for a team. Find me someone who promises that I'll be a starter next year. And, like, I don't think that the Colorado Rapids are going to make Dom Baji the opening day starter at striker. That we've already done that. Like, that was back in the day, the Colorado Rapids started Dom Baji at striker, and he had some good games, but he went missing for long stretches of the season. So long story short, I think he's trying to exploit the system. There are some general managers who will look at him and say, you scored a whole bunch of goals at the end of last season. We're gonna take a flyer on you. We believe in you. A data-driven, statistic-driven guy like Porik Smith with Fran Taylor behind him in the metrics department is probably not that guy, right? Somebody else is going to have to overpay for Dom Baji because Porik Smith is not that guy. That is my sense of what's going on here. I think it's possible. I do think the logic here totally holds up for me. Like, if any team in the league is going to overpay for a guy because they're kind of desperate and they generally don't make the smartest moves, it's FC Cincinnati.
And, you know, to that I would say, Mark, to that I would say, you know what, Dom, go get your money. Absolutely.
Go get your money.
Go get your money. You know, careers are short and everything. You're gradually approaching the dirty 30 and everything. You can get, you know, even just 50 more K a year can be a significant impact, you know, for, you know, a guy on MLS wages and everything. Go get your money and everything, Dom. Have your 5 or 6 times a year in which you dunk on a team that's going to make the playoffs in the Eastern Conference. I hope you don't score against the Rapids, certainly. But other than that, like, you know, you want to score goals and be a bright spot for a bad team and take advantage of them financially, you know, and then you can, you know, eat some Skyline chili. I'm all for it. It should be pointed out, Mark, that the Rapids, as far as I know, folks, are still in discussions with the players that they said they were when they made their roster decisions. This includes the aforementioned Dom Baji, Stephen Betisher, Courtney Ford, Jeremy Kelly, Nicholas Mosqueda, and Drew Moore. Mark, I think Moore is pretty much a lock. I think Betisher, probably it just comes down to maybe term amount of money and whether or not there's an extra team option. He's probably back. Kelly, I'm honestly not so sure. I'm wondering, you know, since last we discussed this, there was obviously the news dropping of the MLS Reserve League, the MLS Next Pro League. I'm wondering if that's kind of, I don't know if like two-way contracts, that's a hockey term, whether or not that would be a thing, but whether or not that'd be something Jeremy Kelly would be interested in as opposed to potentially going for a regular starting role, maybe a little bit more money with a USL championship team. And I think there's also the prospect of, if Charlotte's potentially interested in him but didn't want to select him in the draft, would he potentially want to go home? Going back to North Carolina, where he went to college, would be an interesting thing. But I think Moore's a lock. I think Beta's a lock. I don't know that both Mosqueda and Brian Acosta come without one of the midfielders leaving for Europe in January, where I think things are interesting. We already addressed where I think Baji's an interesting negotiation tactic there, Mark. I want Courtney Ford back. I think the club wants him back. I'm kind of wondering, and this is purely speculation here, folks, whether or not Colorado now is, you know, a location or something of painful memories for him. And maybe now that there's not something geographically tying him to where being in Colorado and working in Commerce City, you know, going back to, you know, driving up to Greeley 2-3 times a week is something that would have been beneficial for him. That's now something that largely is not there. If there's an opportunity for him to for sure get first team minutes, maybe a USL team would say, hey, Court, you're going to be a starter. You're potentially going to be our captain in our future. We're going to pay you. Now that's an opportunity he's more willing to undertake, either because of the pains of being in Colorado or the fact that there's nothing that's potentially anchoring him there. But, you know, I think the club absolutely wants him back. I think they're going to pay him at a level that is reflecting of that. I think even if Drew Moore does re-sign with the club, I do think Court Ford will get more opportunities for first team minutes in 2022 than certainly he did coming back from injury in 2021. I think it's just a matter of whether or not Court wants that or decides that he needs to turn over a new leaf in his life. And I think there'd be a number of opportunities within the USL Championship to do that. And I do think, well, I think it'd be few and far between, and he might have to do some preseason traveling and trials to make this happen. I do think there could be other opportunities for that within MLS. Mark, we already addressed Baji. Any of those other names, Beta, Ford, Kelly, Mosquito, more that you wanted to talk about?
I guess I've learned in my time that, like, prognosticating about what players want to do and whether they're going to re-sign is not a great idea. Baji was really the only one where we could, from an intelligent position, make some guesses. These other players up and down the roster, although I think your thoughts on Ford are smart, and also on Moore, which we talked about before the podcast started, which is like, why a guy who's going to turn 38 this year would go casting about the league for another $150,000 contract to sit on the bench and play maybe 250 minutes when he could make $150,000 and sit on the bench in Colorado and not have to box up all his stuff again. I don't know. Like, that Moore's almost certainly staying in Colorado. But the other guys, like, you know, like to your point before about Baji, if you can go get your money, go get your money, you know? And I think for a guy like Shinya Shiki to, like, throw... to have his agent contact three or four teams and say, you know, what are you offering? Do you want me? You know, how many minutes do you think I'll play? And then to just sit down after that and turn to the Rapids and say, like, your offer doesn't match up as well with, you know, Omaha's offer. I'm going to Omaha. You know, like, that's it. Ford's the only interesting one on all that level, because although there were indications or statements that I heard behind the scenes that the Rapids wanted to bring Ford back and give him MLS minutes, I actually think that Courtney Ford is a really good front-of-the-line USL player. I don't know that he's ever, at this point, I mean, he's 26 years old, I don't know that he's ever going to be an everyday MLS starting center back, because he hasn't been to this point. To that point, like, you know, you can go have a really good, successful career in USL and have a good time and have fun and play all the minutes and win championships. I mean, they made the playoffs with San Antonio, and they made a nice run. You know, that's an enjoyable thing. You know, play your soccer, have a good time. Don't get like caught up having to play at the highest level, especially if it's going to mean just spending some time on the bench. So those are my only thoughts. I think it's all really exciting. You know, like the last thing I was going to say, and it's a thing that I threw out in the last backpass a couple of weeks ago, is we really don't know anything about how the roster is going to look with MLS Next Pro. You know, if you're going to have a reserve team and a reserve roster, there's so many different ways you could do this. You could have one mega roster of 60 slots. I think that's unlikely, but you could do it, right? You could have a roster of 50 slots and then have 10 slots for your academy players. You could keep the current setup, which is 30 slots, and then have the bottom seven be guys who are effectively on your reserve roster, and then have a reserve roster with another 23 slots, right? So to that end, to your point before about bringing back Court Ford, bringing back Stephen Betashore, bringing back Jeremy Kelly, we don't know what the MLS roster rules are going to be, and we don't know whether they're going to be rostered as effectively a senior player, a supplemental player, a reserve player who can kind of go between the two fluidly, right? Like, we just don't know how the roster is going to work. It's entirely possible, Matt, that some MLS team is going to go out there and pay some dude $250,000, and he's going to spend every minute of the 2022 season playing in the reserve league. Like, I think that's a real possibility. And you know, that sucks if you really like playing at a high level, but Matt, you know, there are a lot of guys historically in Major League Soccer who've been paid a six-figure salary to be the third goalkeeper and never suited up and played in a game once. I think you or I would be very happily sit on the bench for six figures for 34 games a year. I would love that, you know, to get paid to just kind of train and you know, like keep my locker clean. I'll be happy to do that for a year or two.
That sounds like something the San Jose Earthquakes would certainly do there, Mark. Mark, we haven't talked about maybe the only real significant news that we had from since last we podcasted was the draw for the CONCACAF Champions League. We now know that in the round of 16, the Colorado Rapids will be playing Comunicaciones FC, who have snow-capped mountains in their crest, actually. Mark, they're a club from Guatemala. They're historically one of the big powers in Guatemala. They finished first in, they were the runner up, so effectively second in the Liga Nacional in the Clausura for 2021. They do play in Guatemala City at Estadio Doroteo Guatemunch Flores, which is also the national team stadium for Guatemala. So for the hyper nerds who are used to the first round, so pre-hexagonal, which I believe was Group A and Group B in previous iterations of CONCACAF World Cup qualifying, which the U.S. played in. The U.S. would have played at that stadium. So good news for the folks in the event that you want to head down for the away day and everything. It looks like everything will be in Guatemala City. We now know the first and second leg for those, Mark. The Rapids will be February 17th. I believe that's the Wednesday. That'll be at 6 p.m. for the away leg, the first leg in Guatemala City, and then they'll be back on the Thursday at 6:30 p.m. at DSG for the second leg, and then obviously that Saturday, February 26th, they'll be taking on LAFC at 1:30 p.m. at the bank. So we now know that that will be the schedule for the first 2 weeks of competition for the Rapids in the round of 16. And we also know the full-on bracket, Mark. So the quarterfinals, the second round opponent they'll play will be the winner of Santos and NYCFC. That is the only scenario folks will have that is possible for an MLS versus MLS team in the knockout round, in the second round of Champions League. Pretty much every single other MLS team is facing a likely Mexican team in the second round. So, Mark, that's a relatively, if you talk about, you know, an opponent that is beatable, a team that is capable of being CONCACAF-y in the Rapids, a relatively not concerning travel situation for the round of 16, pandemic and winter weather notwithstanding, there's a very plausible path for the Colorado Rapids to get to a semifinal, having not played a Liga MX team. Their most likely opponent at that point would be one of Club León, which would be very tough, or the Seattle Sounders. Mark, what do we make of this draw? What, if anything, do you know about Comunicaciones, and how would we feel about a potential second round matchup against the MLS Cup champion Pigeons?
So, of the only two places in Latin America and Central America that I've been, Guatemala is one of them, Matt. I have been to Guatemala City and Antigua and all over the country. It's a fantastic, beautiful country. The native people of Guatemala are known as Los Chapin, Chapines. It's a great place. What can I tell you about the team? Almost nothing. I could tell you one thing about one player, which was when it got brought up on Twitter that we were playing them. There was some comments from fans of the team about their striker, and they were a bit ribald and inappropriate in nature for a podcast that does not carry the explicit label. Suffice it to say, there was sexual innuendo made regarding striker Juan Luis Anangono. Anangono is an Ecuadorian striker. He's 32 years old. He has a whole bucket full of goals. And the comment that I resonated with was somebody pointed out, he said to me online, "Is that the guy who played in MLS?" And I looked it up, and lo and behold, Anangono.
Chicago Fire?
28 games with the Chicago Fire in 2013 and 2014, 4 goals. So that's kind of exciting. He is a big, beefcakey dude with some of the broadest shoulders I've seen in a soccer player he's kind of terrifying in that way. He looks like a Big Mac truck of a dude. So pretty interesting. That's about all I can tell you about this team. Their team captain is a guy by the name of Jose Contreras. Contreras, kind of a club legend. He has 170+ appearances for the team, over 40 goals for Comunicaciones, 78 appearances for the Guatemalan national team, and he's 35 years old. He'll be turning 36 on January 19th. So it's a veteran team. It's an experienced team. It's a mostly Guatemalan team. It should be interesting to see how they play. Guatemalan teams, in my experience in watching both CONCACAF and their national team, they are slight of stature, extremely dribbly, and will foul the ever-living crap out of you. So that's what I would expect. They're going to dribble around you. They're going to play for possession. They're going to keep it on the ground. This is not going to, you know, the Rapids will have the advantage on set pieces, on corner kicks with height and size. That is my great expectation. And this game could get very CONCACAF-y. This could be falling and fouling and carding out the wazoo and all the tricks and dirty pool that you've ever experienced. That would be my expectation from this game.
The Rapids are the better team, Mark. They're more organized. They're going to be more fit, given that both teams are effectively going to be preseason-ish with the, going into the Clausura for Comunicaciones. They have more resources and everything. They've got a better pitch, better nutrition and everything. And they're a team, they are, for their lack of talent and their lack of spending, this is the kind of fixture that, you know, like a Atlanta United would potentially struggle with because of the other things. This is the kind of matchup where, like, Jack Price is going to roll up his sleeves and he's just going to yell in his incomprehensible, you know, English accent that even the Guatemalan players who understand the English language and speak some English will not be able to understand anything that he or Danny Wilson are bantering at them whatsoever. This is a fixture the Rapids should absolutely expect to win. And, you know, if and when we get to it, you know, we'll talk about the mid-March fixtures that they'll have against NYCFC. I will say that NYCFC potentially could be looking at a little bit of a turnover. Obviously, Maxi Morales is going to be a year older. You're looking at an Eastern Conference team that hasn't played in multiple years away at altitude. So there'll be potentially a little bit of a home advantage for the Rapids. And, you know, Mark, I think there's very real curiosity about whether or not Tati Castellanos will be making a return to Europe. When will that happen? Will it happen in January? What kind of club will it be? What's the transfer fee going to look like? How quickly will City Football Group reinvest that into the first team for NYCFC? There'll be a little bit more of a turnover to where I don't know that we can accurately say, you know, with, you know, 4 months to go away from that potential fixture, what that potentially look like, but it'd be a favorable matchup with a known opponent and one that I think the Rapids would be able to have some advantages against, regardless of the fact that they'd be playing an MLS Cup champion with two star attacking players in Maxi Morales and potentially Tati if he ends up staying with the Rapids. And so in that, Mark, I see a very plausible path forward to the Colorado Rapids playing in a semifinal against a Liga MX opponent for the right to go to the final for Champions League. I think that should be a goal. I think TBD, depending on what the Rapids do in January, depending on what City does in January, as to whether or not that should be an expectation. But I'm really excited to see. I do not think an MLS team, I do not think 2022 will be the first year an MLS team wins Champions League. But if I look at it, other than the questions about Castellanos and NYCFC, you're looking at Seattle, Colorado, City, New England Revolution, and then Montreal, where for the most part they are intact with the version that they were last year. They built on something that they'd been building on for a couple of years in 2021 and are now going to be, it's not like the, oh, there's a new head coach, or oh, they succeeded in what they did to get to Champions League and then now potentially the roster is going to blow. These are going to be teams that are going to be fully formed by the time any of them are going to play Liga MX opposition other than Montreal. You know, they're going to be in April. That's a couple months into their regular season and everything. And And so I think these MLS teams are going to be fully formed products by the time they run up against the big bag Mexican monsters they're going to have to end up playing, and they're going to give them, they're going to give them a fight in ways that we saw that Philadelphia was certainly able to, in ways that Seattle Sounders have historically been able to in this tournament. And in that, I'm really excited, Mark, to come on this podcast and talk about Free Space and talk about CCL fever and how it's ultimately led in disappointment, because there's going to be hope and there's going to be a real plausible thing to happen. And ultimately, MLS isn't going to win Champions League, but a lot of these teams are going to have an opportunity to succeed. And I would include the Colorado Rapids in that list. Mark, anything else that we want to say, or shall we get out of here?
No, you said it all. I mean, I think we talked to planning the podcast out at the beginning. It was like, we'll talk about, you know, these three players the Rapids are thinking about adding, and, you know, we'll make it a short podcast, and we'll just, you know, ease back into this thing that we've gotten out of shape from, which was taking a couple weeks off from podcasting. And then, true to form, Matthew, we found things to talk about an hour and 3 minutes this evening. So good times. It's been a lot of fun. And you should not forget that if you are cold, now that it is snowing up in the mountains, you can get some premium neckwear from Roughneck Scarves. All kinds of custom stuff, also stuff that's left over in their store. You should check out their website. And also Icarus FC, they've dropped some new kits that some local teams and some semi-pro teams have signed up and got. Beautiful colors, all sorts of custom styles, collars, all sorts of neat stuff that you can get from them. Roughneck Scars, Icarus FC, our sponsors. Check their stuff out. Matt, tell them how to hit us on the reading materials, on the social, on the email, and on the Twitter machine.
Yeah, at @soccer_rabbi and at LWS Matt Pollard for our respective individual Twitter pages. If you want to check out our writing content elsewhere, for me, it's lastwordonsports.com/soccer. And then obviously for Mark, Pittsburgh Soccer Now, if you want to see what he's doing on the Hounds and Pitt Soccer. And then obviously for our Rapid specific content, and obviously including Backpass and the article that Mark mentioned earlier on in the show, holdingthehighline.substack.com. You can view us in web format there. You can subscribe with an email, and you'll get email notifications for that, and to get everything behind the paywall, and obviously help us continue to build what we are doing here at the HTHL Empire. You can become a paid Highliner as well there at our Substack, holdingthehighline.substack.com. And then if we bring further monetary value to your life, patreon.com/rapids96podcast and denverpost.com/HTHL for a really good deal on the digital sports content that the Post is putting out, as we're increasingly getting into whether or not the Broncos should fire Vic Fangio. And for me, Mark, whether or not this is even a question, but I'm not a Broncos fan and nobody listens to me, so who cares? And then obviously further on the socials, folks, rapids96podcast@gmail.com. If you want to email us, and @rapids96podcast on the Twitter machine, send us your questions using the #AskHTHL. We'll hopefully be getting back to doing bi-weekly podcasts in the month of January, and then go to weekly once the season actually starts. We could use some stuff to talk about, so if you've got questions, feel free to send us, and maybe we'll dedicate a whole show to it. Listeners, we'll see you in the new year. Happy New Year. Looking forward to 2022 and everything that comes from it, from a soccer standpoint, from a Rapid standpoint, and in life.
Peace on Earth.